Hello, Coffee House Shops listeners. My name is Freddie Gray, and I edit The Spectator's US edition. I know you're all huge Westminster enthusiasts, but Brexit is over, and the big story of 2020 is going to be the American election. So I would like to urge you all to listen to my Americano podcast, where we discuss everything that's going on in Trump world and Democrat world. If you go to spectator.co.uk/Americano, you can listen to it all.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Saturday Coffee House Shots. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So Boris has formed his new cabinet, and while there are some familiar faces like Liz Truss, now the longest serving cabinet member, there are also some new faces. So who are Boris's new team and what can we glean about who he's appointed? Katie, let's start off with you and talk about the new Chancellor, Rishi Sunak. What do we know about him?
So this was the biggest surprise of the reshuffle, but I don't think it was a surprise in terms of the fact this person was destined for promotion. There's been long been a sense around Rishi Sunak that he is a rising star. Some people have called him a prime minister in waiting. Others have more likely or more recent times called him a chancellor in waiting. Now, he's worked as Sajid Javid's chief secretary to the Treasury, so effectively his deputy. And from there, we've known that he gets on very well with the Boris Johnson regime. I think to give some background on Rishi Sunak, he entered Parliament in 2015. He previously worked in finance. He's worked in America. He is someone who is seen within Tory circles as being very intellectual. He studied PPE, which doesn't really differentiate you that much as a politician.
I think it makes you really special.
It's great when you have people who studied PPE presenting podcasts. But I think when you look at various politicians, in a way, there was a point when having a PPE degree from Oxford was part and parcel. I think it's worth pointing out that Rishi Sunak got a first in that degree. He also went on to study at Stanford as a Fulbright scholar. So it's not just that he ticks certain boxes in terms of things that probably is fairly normal for a Conservative MP to do, but I think what separates him is almost at an intellectual level, he's seen as operating on a higher level than many of his colleagues. Since entering, I think he got his big break when Boris Johnson became Prime Minister. He is someone who is a long-time Brexiteer. He campaigned for Leave, and he quite early on came out for Boris Johnson during the leadership contest, along with Robert Jenrick and Oliver Dowden, also promoted, and Robert Jenrick also has a nice job. And they wrote a piece together saying they're backing Boris Johnson. And as we've said previously on this podcast, that is the point, I think, where people on Boris Johnson's leadership campaign think things really firmed up, and it looked as though Boris Johnson had a very strong chance of becoming Prime Minister, because at that point in the parliamentary stage of the contest, it wasn't 100% certain that he would have enough MPs backing him, and more MPs then came on board. And that's in part because Rishi Sunak is someone who is very well liked. I think that now he has such a senior role, at some point we're going to have to hear someone being critical of Rishi Sunak. But I have to say, in all honesty, I've never really heard anyone slag off Rishi Sunak, which is quite strange.
Nick, Casey, the big question on everyone's minds this week is also, you know, the condition for Rishi being in the chancellorship is that he has to share advisers with Number 10. So is he going to be able to stick to the fiscal rules that Sajid Javid has put in place, or will he be loosening them as Number 10 probably would like?
Well, I think what's interesting is already people have suggested Rishi Sunak's going to have to be very compliant. I think if you look at what Sajid Javid has said about leaving, because he wouldn't agree to have basically Number 10 aides as his aides, this joint operation, he suggested it was something that no one could agree to, which suggests, well, or no self-respecting minister could agree to, which I don't know if he meant this at Rishi Sunak, because Pair do get on well, but there's clearly some implication there if you follow that through, that perhaps Rishi Sunak is not self-respecting. But I do think it's worth pointing out that Rishi Sunak gets on very well with lots of figures in Number 10. Sajid Javid got on well with Boris Johnson, but not a lot of the staff, so figures like Dominic Cummings. Whereas I think Rishi Sunak is trusted implicitly by the bulk of the staff in Number 10. And I think that he naturally is on the same way of thinking, the same wavelength as a lot of those in Number 10. So I think that if you want to read it as, oh, he's saying yes to everything they're saying, you could. But I also think it's probably more likely that both sides would naturally get to the same point and then find they agree because they've got to the same point, then what perhaps happens like with Sajid Javid, where he had to slightly change to get on the same wavelength. I think when it comes to the spending rules, we know that Number 10 have been are very keen on spending, and Sajid Javid's team were keen on to keep a sense of fiscal discipline. That's how you got to Sajid Javid's spending rules. We don't yet know if these will be changed, but I think around Rishi there's always been a sense that he is easier when it comes to things like the spending reviews from Number 10's point of view, so that suggests he might be more willing to turn the taps on.
James, Katie mentioned there Oliver Dowden, who is one of the three young rising stars who were one of the first to back Boris Johnson. He's now been given the role of Culture Secretary. What do we know about him?
So Oliver Dowden is a Westminster creature. He was David Cameron's Deputy Chief of Staff. He then became an MP in his own right in 2015. He backed Remain in the referendum, I think, largely because he had been very close to David Cameron, you know, and it would obviously have been quite an affront not to. But very interestingly, in that leadership election that followed in 2016, he backed Boris Johnson. He then backed Boris Johnson again in 2019. And I think that is because Dowden, you know, who worked at CCHQ before he went to work for Cameron, kind of had a sense of what the politics of this meant, and you know that Boris Johnson was a person who could create a Tory electoral coalition. I think at DCMS he will be interesting. I think he certainly will not shy away from confrontation with the BBC. When he was in Cameron's Downing Street, I think he was kind of privately slightly appalled by how the Leveson stuff was handled. So I think we can expect him to be kind of fairly robust in defence of a free press. I think what you also see here is you know, I think what has impressed Boris Johnson about him is he was the Cabinet Minister for the Cabinet Office before. He's just very good at guiding. You know, he knows how Whitehall works and he knows how to get things through the system. I think one of the interesting things about his job, the DCMS job, is, you know, I think we still have a lot of us still think about it as a kind of David Mellor style Ministry of Fun. And there are lots of fun things in DCMS, but it's also responsible for all the digital stuff, which is absolutely crucial to the UK's economic prospects in the future. Because if you think about it, right, HS2 is kind of physical infrastructure. We can argue till the cows come home about what growth benefits that has. But there is no doubt that the infrastructure that matters most in the 21st century is digital infrastructure. Is, you know, are you connected to the global economy or not? And I think that is going to be a very important aspect of this, because, you know, if you look at the Tory electoral coalition, they all want better connection, either because they're kind of classic traditional Tory rural seats with relatively low population densities, or if you actually look at a lot of those red wall seats the Tories won, even the towns there have poor levels of connectivity in terms of 4G and broadband speeds and the like. So if you talk to MPs who stood for the first time in this election, if you could, when you can introduce yourself, you send out a kind of thing saying, what are the biggest issues in your area? Nearly all of them will say that what comes back as top is broadband, mobile phone signal, because, you know, that is the, you know, an everyday, day-to-day thing that drives people crazy is, you know, the spinning pizza of death or just your phone call dropping and all that stuff. So, you know, I think watch to see, you know, he'll do the fun stuff, but I think it's the economic stuff matters an awful lot too.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, this reshuffle has been criticised by some as being bad for diversity, as several high-profile women were fired. But one woman who was promoted is Anne-Marie Trevelyan, AMT for short. She is a former Brexiteer who worked for Vote Leave. So is she just part and parcel of Dominic Cummings' cabinet?
What's interesting about Anne-Marie Trevelyan, and I think lots of her colleagues do refer to as AMT, is ultimately that she is someone who I think during the Theresa May years was seen as a bit of a problem MP. That was because she was a member of the European Research Group. She was a very committed Brexiteer. She was an ERG whip, and she was also a whip for Boris Johnson's leadership. So she was someone who combined things that can make you quite a risky person to have as an enemy, which is ultimately that she had strong views on issues. And she was also organised, which can be a deadly combination in politics, and actually one that quite a few people struggle to have both. But for those reasons, she was seen as someone who could cause trouble for Theresa May. But she is very loyal to Boris Johnson. She's very loyal to this government's agenda. She's committed to the UK leaving the EU, which it has done, but clearly there's still a bit more to do to get it done. And I think that when you look broadly at what she's going to be bringing to this, it's interesting that Dominic Cummings is someone who doesn't particularly have that much time for MPs, I think would be a kind way to put it. I think if you look at his role as campaign director on the Vote Leave campaign during the EU referendum, There are lots of reports that he had upset various lifelong Eurosceptics, suggesting that they didn't have the right approach. They didn't feel as though they'd been treated with the required respect they should. I think there are lots of blog posts too, if people want to go and look at them, criticising certain MPs. But one MP, Dominic Cummings, has praised is Anne-Marie Trevelyan. And I think that for that person to praise an MP, you have to clearly have something, because he doesn't see it in a lot of them. So I think that in Anne-Marie Trevelyan, you have someone who is strong-minded, but ultimately, I would say, what's interesting is, I think there's a mix in this cabinet. So there are some people who have perhaps changing opinions, and they are happy to change their opinion to go with the new regime. There are other people who have strong opinions, but I think those who have strong opinions in this government have been picked because they match those of the power base of Number 10. And I think she falls into that category. It's also the case that, as James has reported previously, we could have a situation where Difford falls into the Foreign Office in the not too distant future. And I think that Anne-Marie Trevelyan is someone who is committed enough, she's not going to cause a big problem over that. And she's also very critical in the past of foreign aid. So I think that she is, in terms of what she's going to bring to her brief, I think that in a way, just when Theresa May appointed Priti Patel to that brief, which didn't go particularly well if we look at a long-term plan, but that was not to do with her personal views, but perhaps a misjudged holiday. I think Anne-Marie Trevelyan is someone who will work to try and make sure that when it comes to the funding, it's not going to go to places which creates embarrassing headlines, because she herself is critical of that.
I think also it's worth noting that she is the only minister in Difford who is only a minister in Difford. Everyone else in Difford is also a minister in the Foreign Office, which you know, this double hatting, I think, the phrase that Number 10 always uses, they wish to amalgamate the Foreign Office and Difford. And I think you see, you know, when every junior minister, everyone from the Secretary of State down in both departments, is in two departments rather than just one, you are on the way to that amalgamation.
And James, another woman that has been promoted this week is Suella Braverman, also a Brexiteer, and she has replaced Geoffrey Cox as the Attorney General. What do we know about her?
Well, I think the most interesting thing about this is, I think, a sign of how serious Number 10 are about, you know, taking on so-called judicial activism and the issue of judicial review. Because Suella Braverman was a lawyer before she went into politics, and she has, for a long time, been out there on this question. You know, since the election, she's kind of several times repeatedly said, you know, you need to look at this balance between Parliament and the courts. It's swung too far in the courts' favour. Judges are having too much influence on decisions that she thinks should be left to politicians. And I think what you see in this appointment is, as Katie said, it's an example. In Number 10, when people have strong views, they were picked because their strong views align with those of Number 10. I think lots of the other candidates to be an Attorney General might have been prepared to go along with what Number 10 wanted to do, but they wouldn't have been enthusiasts for the agenda. This is her agenda. I think we will see that in the coming weeks and months. I think, you know, one of the big things to keep an eye on is the role of the judges.
But as Attorney General, does she have remit over that, or does that more fall under Robert
She doesn't
Buckland?
Run the justice system, but she writes the government's legal opinions. So if the government's legal opinions are that we have a case to do X, Y, and Z, that has a big impact, because, you know, that is the terrain on which you end up engaging in the argument. You know, if you are basically the government are saying, no, we are within bounds to do this, you're going to end up with a lot more court cases, a lot more high-profile court cases, and it's going to become a much bigger issue of public debate.
Katie and James, thanks very much. And do join us next week.